Hi, just before you listen to your 3CR podcast, a quick message. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. By becoming a regular donor, you can help us stay resilient and radical. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au. Thanks for listening and enjoy your podcast.
But you also had people that were very fine people.
Very fine people.
On both sides.
And the aliens would mind meld and give them the technology. They're bad aliens.
So
are you surprised the Nazis were influenced by demons?
No, if demons are real, I would definitely think they'd be on the side of the Nazis.
Yeah.
McDonald's is connected to the Clintons. They chop up the bodies and put them into the sausage and hamburgers. People are being cannibalized. Look it up.
And I'm watching CNN talk about this as violent white nationalist protests. We have done everything in our power to keep this peaceful, you know?
It's Pepe's become kind of a symbol.
Welcome to Yeah Nah Passeran, a show about fascism and its gravediggers. I'm Cam Smith.
I'm Andy Fleming.
And this week we are joined by Hannah Gaze, who is a journalist and researcher. She is the author of the excellent newsletter Notes from Underground. Hannah, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a very intense week. Last week saw the assassination of the right-wing influencer Charlie Kirk. At this stage, I think still not a lot is known about the motives of the shooter. Could you tell us a little bit about what you're seeing out there in the world?
Yeah, so just to give a little bit of a breakdown of what happened last week. So Charlie Kirk is the head of an organization called Turning Point USA, also known as TPUSA. He's probably one of the most prominent figures in the MAGA movement. He was instrumental in churning out the vote for Trump's win in 2024. TPUSA has basically become like a big force for pushing conservative politics on college campuses, but it's also been instrumental in pushing major MAGA figures forward into the limelight. Charlie Kirk has a podcast, or had a podcast that featured a range of guests from throughout the movement, including members of Trump's own family, and he was very much a mover and shaker in conservative politics. So last week, he was shot while doing an event in Utah. And after a pretty chaotic 33 hours, they caught the suspect, who they believe to be a 22-year-old man named Tyler Robinson. Robinson is originally from Utah. His family are all registered Republicans, but it, based on the reporting that's been available now, and some statements from the Utah governor and the FBI, it looks like Tyler was somewhat different than his family in terms of his political leanings. But we also just really don't know a lot about this. And it's, to say the least, it's been an absolute chaotic shit show in terms of a lot of what's been coming out with regards to the assassination. Online, on the right, there have been many calls for revenge, including from people in Trump's own administration. There has also been quite a lot of speculation around the shooter's motives, accusing him of being Antifa, accusing him of being motivated by LGBTQ issues to attack Charlie Kirk, and just kind of endless conspiracy theorizing on platforms like X and various live streams. Similarly, too, on the left, there's been a lot of speculation on social media as to whether was this guy a griper, which is the term that's used to talk about Nifuentes's followers, but also not really seeing much of any indication as to that either. So really, we're kind of in this position of several days into the investigation, not really knowing anything about the shooter's motives, not really knowing anything about what drove him to commit this act. And he is going, I think he has his first court appearance tomorrow on Tuesday, but maybe we'll find out more there, but it could be a long while until we can really make any sense of this.
Kirk's death has obviously been a story that's commanded enormous attention, not only in the United States, but elsewhere, including in Australia and I guess the Anglophone generally. What do you think he symbolised, and what do you think his death symbolises to, I suppose, the right generally? Because it seems like many did look to Charlie as a kind of very important guiding light, politically speaking.
Yeah, I mean, I think within the U.S. and within the right particularly, I mean, Kirk's reputation went through many different phases, as well as different phases with Turning Point USA. I remember back in the day, like maybe during Trump's first administration, within the right, like Turning Point USA was kind of seen as either something that should be criticized for not being far right enough. There was someone infamously within the white nationalist movement in the U.S., there was a push by Nick Fuentes' fans, aka Groypers, to kind of argue with Charlie Kirk during his various live appearances on campus. They called it the Groyper Wars, and it would basically be Kirk would show up at a campus and Groypers would come on and go in line, ask questions of Kirk, and just kind of argue with him. But sort of over the years, his reputation in the conservative movement broadly has shifted. I mean, Turning Point USA started out back in 2012 as a pretty small organization and has become a multi-million dollar organization with hundreds of chapters on U.S. campuses and commanding a great deal of influence within the MAGA movement. I mean, Kirk had, through conferences and events under the Turning Point USA banner, that basically brought together the biggest names in Republican politics, including Trump. And he very much went from kind of this like backwater campus organizer to someone who commanded the attention and also the donations of prominent Republicans and made himself an instrumental part of the movement. Now, I think in terms of kind of like why this had so much of an impact, both in the U.S. and abroad, I mean, is yes, his central role in Republican politics, but also even in an era where we're accustomed to political violence, news of political violence is not something that is out of line with trends that we've seen in the United States or elsewhere, whether it be against Republican or Democratic lawmakers. Obviously, last year there was an attempt on Trump's life. There have been attempts and murders of lawmakers elsewhere in the United States. And that, I mean, that has obviously been going on for a while. But with Kirk, it's a little bit different. I mean, he's not a politician. He's a media figure. And he may have cozied up to politicians. He may have worked closely with politicians. But I think for a lot of people who, whether podcasters, influencers, journalists, are kind of looking at this and realizing that this kind of spiral of violence can rope you in too. And certainly that's been a factor within the U.S. for years. But it's a worrying escalation, I think, at a moment when U.S. politics feels very much frayed.
I do wonder if Americans are going to become a bit more accustomed to this sort of thing. I note there have been a number of recent publications by, you know, neo-Nazi terror outfits like Terrorgram, which put forward the idea that, you know, if you the sort of person who might want to go out and do a school shooting, well, no one really pays attention to school shootings anymore, so why not do something a little bit more specific? I suspect this is not the last assassination of this type that we're going to see, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, and it's also hard to speculate, because I think one thing that actually was kind of interesting about seeing some of the reactions on publications and channels that were once kind of associated with Telegram is just condemning it, which that was kind of interesting because someone like Charlie Kirk is not really what I would consider. I mean, he's not exactly in their same wheelhouse. They might, politics operates obviously on the spectrum, and Kirk had pushed some talking points like the Great Replacement that very much aligned with like neo-Nazi rhetoric, but he's not of that class, so to speak. So I do kind of, yeah, I mean, I do kind of wonder what this does mean long-term, because there's, I think, some situations where a catastrophe like this opens the door to more violence and people realizing that, like you said, that they could go out and commit a similar act. Getting a gun in the United States is not exactly a particularly difficult thing to do. But it also does, I mean, the reaction to it and kind of the pushback against it does kind of make me wonder, like, is this is clearly some kind of inflection point for American politics, but like, I think the direction that it goes in is sort of still up in the air.
In terms of the reaction of the Trump administration, it seems like there's an opportunity, perhaps, or another opportunity being presented to it to both assert or to claim that the alleged killer was motivated by some form of left-wing or progressive politics. And in order to combat that, the government has to crack down on a whole series of progressive organisations. What do you make of that apparent attempt? Because it sounds familiar, but perhaps if it is an inflection point, that sort of rhetoric and policy might actually have greater effect, perhaps.
Yeah, it's tough to say with the administration what exactly they mean by that, too. Because there was an article in the New York Times that quoted two administration officials basically talking about some kind of crackdown on left-wing civil society groups. And it used the rhetoric of domestic terrorism, basically trying to find ways to crack down on civil society groups using the domestic terrorism statute as a means of doing that. The problem is there is no such thing as a domestic terrorism statute. There's no such thing as domestic terrorism organizations. There are organizations that are designated as terrorists by the State Department, but within the United States proper, it's not a designation that exists for organizations. So, I mean, you could commit an act of violence, and then there are certain laws on the books to basically like terrorism enhancements, but what the Trump administration seems to be describing is something that they've referred to before, particularly with regards to Antifa, an organization that we all know exists as a singular organization. They've talked about naming Antifa a domestic terrorism organization. Trump did that back in his first administration on multiple occasions. I think probably most notably during the 2020 Black Lives Matter protests. And he made a comment to that effect today. But I think it's kind of like important to hedge at these moments a little bit of like, well, they do want to do some kind of crackdown. And I think I do take them seriously about that. We just don't like the ways that they are describing it right now is pretty ambiguous. And it's also focusing on going after civil society groups is going to, with regards to the public and their base, is kind of going to end up sort of diminishing the purpose of why they were doing this in the first place. Of like, they're claiming that there's some kind of conspiracy around Kirk's murder, but if it's just this one guy, I mean, wow, how would they make that connection? How would they make that argument to the public? So I think it's tough because, well, we know there's a history of them making these kinds of inflammatory statements. And I think now more than ever, they're certainly making those points in a very serious way. The ways that they would possibly execute that kind of crackdown is just very unclear.
I suppose one thing that concerns me in this context in particular is, given the range of policies and practices of the Trump administration with regards to migrant workers and so on, laws seem to come second to practice. So I suppose I wonder whether or not it would be necessary for particular legislation to be passed in order for some kind of concerted effort or some kind of political crackdown to take place.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it's, at this point, it's just kind of hard to say what direction they're going to go with this and sort of what form it could possibly take.
I did note that Matt Forney, the conservative blogger, described the assassination of the American Reichstag fire, which I'm not sure if he's fully up on the history of that, but said every Democratic politician must be arrested and the party banned under RICO. It's time for a complete crackdown on the left. Hannah, you recently wrote a review of a book by another MAGA influencer, Jack Posobiec. That book was Unhumans, The Secret History of Communist Revolutions, brackets, and How to Crush Them, end brackets. Can you tell us a little bit about the thesis that Posobiec lays out in that?
Yeah, so this is one of a handful of books that Jack Posobiec has written. You can check out his entire library of literature, ranging from the vaguely coherent early books to this, which he happened to write with a ghostwriter, which actually did not make it much more coherent. But Unhumans was released before the election, and it sort of fits in with some of the propaganda that Posobiec has pushed about Antifa. In fact, actually wrote a book about Antifa called The Antifa, a very creative title. And it focuses on creating this sort of specter of this grand kind of leftist specter that needs to be crushed by good people, right-thinking people, because he believes that this nebulous leftist something or other basically poses this imminent and existential threat to civilization. So these evil leftists he deems unhumans. One thing that I noted in the review that I thought was kind of interesting is this really does both the description of the left as being like a threat to civilization and also even just the term unhumans bears a lot of parallels to Lothrop Stoddard, who was a white nationalist author and very strict anti-communist, who was among a small cadre of extreme far-right authors whose work on promoting eugenics really influenced the World War II era Nazis. So basically, Posobiec seems to have drafted this book that is laying out, in it's not particularly specific, I would say. I mean, using, say, RICO to go against the left, like, I'm not really sure how you would do that. The left, I think they're thinking a lot about how the mob was prosecuted back in the day, and I don't know what the conspiracy would be here, but these guys, like Posobiec, his co-author, have really tried to put forward this idea that this grand anti-civilizational left is creating this conspiracy theory that they need to crush. And that's where Unhumans comes in. I think its prominence in this publication within the right before the election was particularly worrying. I think it really very much kind of signaled a lot of the rhetorical shifts that we're seeing right now.
Wait until they find out about John Zerzan.
Hannah, one of the other proposals that I've seen in the last few days is that there should be some sort of major crackdown on speech. I think the idea is that people have been unfairly maligned as bigots or racists and that this has then incited violence against them. You recently wrote a piece about another group that has allegedly unfairly maligned people as bigots and anti-Semites and the like, Canary Mission, although they seem to be working closely with the government. Could you tell us a little bit about what you found about the way that Zionist doxing outfits like Canary Mission and Beta, what their relationship is to the US government?
Yeah, so the piece was basically an investigation into Canary Mission and Betar US, which were two of the organizations that were appearing in a lot of court documents, as well as taking credit for the crackdown on pro-Palestine student activists that really defined Trump's first couple of months in office. So both of these organizations were mentioned in a lot of court documents for pro-Palestine student activists that the administration was targeting with deportation. So Mahmoud Khalil and others basically were put in the spotlight by Betar and Canary Mission. They're not the only ones, to be clear. There's other organizations that basically have been targeting pro-Palestine student activists for years. But Canary Mission in particular, I think, is probably one of the more longstanding ones. So I was looking through a lot of the court documents related to these attempted deportations. Thankfully, a lot of those were shut down. But and those two organizations kept coming up. But it finding kind of like a connection to the administration was somewhat murky. In the piece they report out, there was a senior figure in Homeland Security Investigations, which is basically like an arm within ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. HSI focuses often a lot on kind of bigger cases that require a significant amount of intelligence, not necessarily these kinds of smaller deportations. So even the fact that HSI was just involved in general was pretty alarming. But this official said during one of the cases challenging the student deportations, basically that a lot of the names of the students that the government were trying to deport came from these two organizations. So Canary Mission is a group that was founded in 2015. It's basically started in Israel, continues to operate in Israel. They don't list themselves as an Israeli entity anywhere on their website, but a publication called The Forward years ago basically made the connection between Canary Mission and a group called Megamot Shalom that's based in Israel. And it's kind of interesting because one thing that I found while reporting it is that they also seem to be operating on U.S. time. There was a job listing for a bookkeeper that was tied to one of the board members and employees in Canary Mission that basically was hiring staff in Israel to work on U.S. hours. It didn't list the organization that they were affiliated with, but nevertheless, it bore a great deal of resemblance to Canary Mission. Betar is a little different. The Betar movement has been around since before Israel's founding. It's very much in line with a form of militant and extreme far-right Zionism. And the current iteration of this Betar organization that's operating in the United States is tied to a man named Ron Tarosian, who is a prominent PR figure in public relations, who also claims to have basically been involved in the broader Betar movement for years before restarting this Betar organization in the U.S. in 2024. Stan's kind of an interesting figure because, like, he has all of these ties to pro-Trump politics, but, like, to the extent that Betar as an organization has strong connections to the administration is pretty unclear. And one of the things that kind of became very clear while reporting this is that it's very hard to tell whether or not that kind of ambiguity and those lack of connections is kind of intentional is unclear, but certainly they're a organization that was trying to cozy up to Trump.
Hannah, there have been obviously many efforts made by groups that you've discussed into influencing campus politics. And of course, the background is that the recent killing of the leader of TPUSA, and there has been numerous protests on college campuses about Palestine in particular. Those seem to have subsided or been smashed. What's the situation on college campuses in the United States now, and how are all these things, do you think, playing out?
It always kind of fascinates me because as someone who I am now aging myself, as someone who graduated college like 14 years ago, I mean, I did a grad program for a little bit, but graduated from that 6 years ago. The amount of concern that, I mean, American culture just in general, not just the right, places on the opinions and actions of college students has always struck me as a little bit befuddling. But now it just kind of seems like, I mean, it's a little bit hard to say because basically school's just started. So it's middle of September right now. Campuses just kind of started filling up a couple of weeks ago. But the administration has been going after prominent universities since Trump took office for alleged anti-Semitism. It's been harassing students, has been attacking diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, and has been focusing on all of these kind of like very campus-centric grievances for some time. And then, like you said, this happens, Kirk's assassination, and kind of returning the focus in some respects back to campuses. And I think it's hard to not feel bad for like the kids who are just trying to go to school here. Because at this point, I think one of the lessons that I've certainly taken away from a lot of like the crackdown on campus activism and just kind of like the crackdown on student life in general is that it's a society that basically doesn't really want kids to be kids. I don't know. When I was 20, I said stupid things. Now, if you're 20 and you go to a small protest with your friends in support of Palestine, you could be risking deportation, and the stakes for basically any kind of like activism, just to, like, well, like well-intentioned or even just college students being college students, has just become incredibly high. So I don't know. It's just kind of, it feels, I mean, and this isn't, the culture war on campus is like certainly not an aspect of American politics that is by any means new, but it does feel very much like the stakes are much, much higher these days.
Well, Hannah, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us. If people want to find more of your work, your newsletter is Notes from Underground, and people can, of course, find you on Blue Sky. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Andy, that is our program. We will be back next week. See you then.
See you then.
Want to know what happened at the 2024 People's Blockade of the World's Largest Coal Port?
Come along to a special 3CR screening of Turning the Ship, the short film that explains all, and be inspired to join the blockade this year.
Revisit the epic event and hear how this incredible people-powered protestival came together.
Join us on Friday, 19th September at Evil Thoughts in East Brunswick.
Head to Rising Tide Victoria Insta or Facebook page to RSVP and to get all the details.
Rising Tide Victoria is a 3CR supporter. Public transport's great.
What's not great is that unless you've got a radio with you, you can't listen to 3CR when you're on it.
Until now. The Community Radio Plus app lets you listen to us wherever you are.
Get on board and search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.